All right, guys, welcome back to episode number 3 of the SEC Basketball Experience here on Southeastern 14. Max is throwing up all kinds of signals over there. We're only 10 seconds into this thing, but more to come, perhaps, on this episode, which is going to be very action-packed. You're going to hear a lot of different voices in this episode. One you're going to hear from is Jordan Harper from Tide Illustrated. We do a bit of a deep dive on Alabama, who, as we discover late in the interview, may be now the favorite to win the national championship in college basketball next year. The betting favorite, according to our friends at Bet Online, who I'm going to tell you about in just a second. But we got a lot more voices to hear from, Max, because we're also going to hear from some voices from the people, because we requested some voicemails from you guys to send in your questions / comments. And boy, did we get some interesting voicemails. And we will play those later on in one of the segments here on the show. But before we get to our main topic to start things off, which is going to be our early thoughts on some SEC awards, who could be the front runners for some of these top individual awards heading into next season, we're going to give you our short list of some of those. But before we do, let me tell you about Bet Online, your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. And you can also bet, as I said, on the national championship odds, which we'll talk about Alabama's maybe a little bit. Every stat, every matchup, and live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When it's over, you can head over to the online casino, get on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get on the action. Use that promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online. The game starts here. All right, Max, we are going to start off with a look at some awards. And again, it's June, so we got a long way to go on this, but we're just having some fun. We got stuff to talk about. And so this is an area that actually, I believe it was Mother Carol who suggested this potential topic via the DMs to Max Barr. And so we are going to discuss the different awards, whether that is Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Sixth Man, all those kind of fun individual awards, Coach of the Year potentially. Up front, though, we will tell you, we're going to save Player of the Year for one of the listener voicemails, because we do have a voicemail on Player of the Year. But Max, let's start with some other stuff. What about Coach of the Year? Because that's always a fun one to think about. As we start to look at this, and this we may tip our hand a little bit as to what our projections could be for certain teams.
Yes.
But we're in June. The award's going to be handed out next March. All right? I think this is the hardest one to predict, because you just have no idea.
Yeah.
However, if we're going to put together a short list of potential coaches of the year in the SEC, give me some names.
Well, Blake, did you say Alabama was the favorites to win the SEC championship or the NCAA championship? I didn't hear you right.
Well, Max, I'm glad you asked that again, because that gives me another opportunity to tell you that courtesy of our friends at Bet Online, promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, 50% welcome bonus, first deposit. Alabama is the current betting favorite to win the whole thing. Oh. Alabama, and again, we'll give you the specific odds when we get in the interview, but yes, they are ahead of Kansas, and oh yeah, that back-to-back national champion, UConn.
Oh, that team?
Yeah.
Well, I think we can start there. Have Nate Oates as a top candidate there.
Wow.
And I'll put right with him, because we'll get to a man, we're just teasing everything here. Another listener voicemail. I think they're going to be neck and neck this year. Nate Oates and Bruce Pearl. I'll put those two guys out there first. I don't think there's really any. I don't think you have really any pushback on those two, can you?
No, I mean they would be in the running if those are two of the teams that are competing for the championship for the SEC regular season title. You know, and that kind of stuff. Number one seed, number two seed type material.
Right. Yeah,
like you said, I don't think we're spoiling anything. If you've listened to these first three episodes, if you've watched any of the stuff we've done this summer, you know we're pretty high on both these teams. And so, yeah, I think, as always, the Coach of the Year can be interesting, because I think the SEC Coach of the Year, I should have done this, but I just did not. If you look back at some of like the more recent ones, right, the slam dunk last year was Lamont Paris, because he was the one that took a team that was picked 14th in the preseason, was able to translate that into one of the top teams in the SEC. Year before that, I think you had Jerry Stackhouse, and was it Buzz Williams that may have got the SEC Coach of the Year? Dennis Gates should have been in there. I don't care what anyone says. But so, like, it went to those kind of guys, the guys who maybe took the teams who were expected to be lower on the ladder and ultimately surprised you. So for that reason, I'll go the opposite route here and say that those are the, you know, probably two very likely choices to be in the conversation, since they're probably going to have the best odds to win the SEC, those two teams. But I think this is where you get some interesting ones. I think Mark Pope is an interesting one because he, again, takes over Kentucky, completely new roster. Let's say the Cats come out just purring right off the bat. These guys are just, you know, better than some may think. You know, so I would put Mark Pope in that category. And then I think that's where you have to sort of choose from the list of, okay, is this the year that Chris Beard gets Ole Miss back to Chris Beard level teams, right? I think he could be an interesting option because, as we'll talk about, that roster is kind of in the middle maybe for me right now. But I think, you know, we'll talk more about them in the coming weeks. But I think Beard's an interesting one, Pope. And then I'm going to go with, I mean, I think you could go with either of the two guys that had teams at the bottom last year. So the teams that finished at the two bottom spots last year, that was Vanderbilt and Missouri. If Mark Byington is able to get the Commodores to the tournament this year, something like that, if Dennis Gates is able to turn things around with the Tigers, I think both of those could be interesting options.
Yeah, I think I was going to go there also. I'm glad you did that because that's what the award has been lately. It's been the overachieving team, not the best team. So if we're talking about overachievers, I had Dennis Gates and Chris Beard as my other two. I have four names written down. I had Nate Oates and Bruce Pearl, and then I had Dennis Gates and Chris Beard. So I think those are what Ole Miss finished 10th, I think, 10th or 11th. And obviously Missouri with the rough season there. So if either of those teams pop up into like a go into March as like a 6 seed, you know, 5 seed, you know, flirting with the top 25, Missouri or Ole Miss, I think those any of those teams, those bottom like four teams, if they're flirting with the top 25 this year, they got to be in the conversation.
Well, so does Father Lamont Paris back to back. One back to back maybe on the SEC coach of the year. I mean, come on. So, all right. Well, we could list every reason why every coach could be on this, you know, this potential short list, but I think those are some ones I just had initially.
So who's your pick?
I mean, I don't have like, I'm not going to pick my winner just yet. Like, I feel like that's hard because I'm like, I guess one of my bold predictions last week was that Vanderbilt's going to make the tournament, right? That was one of my bold predictions. So let's say if Vanderbilt makes the tournament, I think Mark Byington would have a great chance to be the SEC coach of the year. But is that going to happen? No clue. Would I say that's the favorite right now? No, I would not. So
I don't think there's any favorite. Like, I don't.
No.
You know,
if Alabama just steamrolls the league, which even as good as they're going to be, I think it's still it's hard to just steamroll through this league. Although we've seen Alabama come close to doing it, they were 16-2 2 years ago. Auburn was 15-3 a couple of years ago. Alabama 16-2 in 21. So like we've seen the winner of the SEC have, you know, three losses, two losses, except for last year, you know, Tennessee had four, but in those scenarios, I think you can have the winner of the league being a good option as the coach of the year, but otherwise it's more likely to come from your just surprise team that comes out of nowhere. And again, I think that's just, it's impossible to predict right now because I could go with seven different choices maybe.
Yeah, I'd say if I have to put money on it right now, I'll go with Nate Oates just because I think they're the best team. But if I'm putting money on who's my surprise team, who do I think what coach is going to improve a ton from last year, I'm going Dennis Gates. I mean, if you go from 0-4 to like 8, 9, 10 conference wins, I mean, that's
– yeah.
Come on. So.
I think I would go Gates and Mark Pope would be the two outside of the Nate Oates or Bruce Pearl choice, depending on who won the league. I would go Dennis Gates, Mark Pope would be my two picks. Or maybe it's just John Calipari's revenge tour and he just takes this whole thing and just sweep the awards.
There's so many storylines.
So many. All right, defensive player of the year. I mean, I think this one's kind of, if you're making a short list, to me, this is, you're starting with two very easy selections, and that's Jani Broome and Zakai Ziegler. Beyond that, I mean, Cam Matthews, who else?
Well, like, I know I'm going to look into this because I don't know what other conferences did, But the SEC returned its entire all-defensive team.
That's right. You're right. I just thought about that. I'm like, they did return the entire group.
They returned Ziegler, Broom, Cam Matthews, Jonas Adu, and Andy Garcia. They returned the
I
whole
forgot.
defensive
Yeah.
team.
Adu's back. I'm like, yeah, he wasn't, but he is back in the league. Yeah. There you go.
Yep. So.
Wow. Well, that's easy enough. On to the next. Like, pick any of those five guys you want. They're all back. So set that up perfectly, Max.
Yeah, I mean, I've got those five guys listed, and I've got Ziegs, Broom, and Cam Matthews highlighted as like who I would say the top three are. Probably Ziegler and Broom top two, and then maybe Matthews a step behind them because he's just not going to put up those crazy stat numbers that Ziegler and Broom are, steals and blocks wise. I don't know. Take your pick, Ziegler or Broom. I'll go Ziegs just because I think he's going to have to just be a maniac for Tennessee.
I picked Ziegler as my SEC Defensive Player of the Year 2 years ago. I think last year we all picked Broom, I'm pretty sure. So, I mean, I don't
Either
think you go
one.
wrong either way.
Yeah.
I'll just go with Broom since he's the reigning defending champion here. But it could be either guy. And I think Garcia is an interesting one too. You mentioned him. Let's say A&M finishes second or something or third or something like that. One of the reasons is going to be because he's playing well, I would think, defensively. And so I think he's an intriguing option. But the more likely option is the two guys that I think have made their case for being Defensive Player of the Year the past 2 years. And so,
Yep.
yeah, this is an easy one. So I guess
Easy
I did
one,
not put it
yeah.
together. I'm like, you're right. Everybody came back from the defensive team. So
That's crazy. Yeah.
it's crazy. All right. So what's next? Six
We can go
man.
either freshman or six man.
Let's go freshman and then we'll go six
Freshman.
man. Six man's impossible. But we'll go freshman first. So, I mean, I think this one, we talk about one of the guys in the interview with Jordan Harper. I feel like if a Darion Reed potentially could be in the mix, depending on how good, I mean, which we expect Alabama to be very good. So I don't think that's much of a surprise. I mean, you could maybe go with one of the Arkansas guys, depending on, if one of those guys just kind of explode out of nowhere, or not out of nowhere, but you know what I'm saying. Boogie Flan, Carter Knox, Richmond, if one of those guys just becomes the guy or something, alongside John L. Davis, that's an option. And then I'm just looking down, I'm like, well, there's some good freshmen elsewhere.
Yep.
But let's see who I'm forgetting here, because like I'm
I
just
put out a
scrolling down my
tweet.
list.
So I actually dove pretty deep into this, Blake, because I didn't, we're just so caught up in the transfers. The freshmen kind of slipped the
Yeah.
mind a little bit in the chaos. So I, and everyone always argues like, oh, well, he's number 10 here, but on this platform, he's number 30, blah, blah, blah. Guess what? I did Rivals, ESPN, 24/7, and On3. I did all four of them. And I averaged them out every single freshman in the SEC. It took me a while, but I did it. So 14 freshmen in the SEC are a consensus top 50. There's only one in the top 10. That's Trey Johnson at Texas, right around fifth or sixth, depending on what platform you look at. And then Asa Newell for
Georgia.
Georgia, about 13th, 14th, whatever you want to do. And then Darion Reed is the last consensus five star. So there's You have three consensus five stars. You got a few four slash five, Boogie Flan, Aiden Sherrell, and then the rest are all four stars. You got the Knox and Richmond at Arkansas, Tahad Pettiford. I know you really like him at Auburn. Anor Boateng, we talked about him when we were doing our Missouri starting five. LeBaron Filon, we haven't talked about much. We'll talk about him a little bit in the interview. Colin Chandler, a reclass kid for Kentucky, kind of swept under the rug with all the Kentucky transfers. Cam Scott for South Carolina is a huge piece there because I think he might actually start over Jacoby Wright. He's going to have to put in a ton of minutes. Samto Cyril at Georgia and Nas Cunningham at Alabama. Those are your 14 top 50 freshmen that are coming to the league this year.
Trey Johnson probably has the best path to putting up the most points, I would think. Yeah, I think he's got a good path to doing that. I know he's gonna have Mark with him, and that obviously is a good lineup. We talked about Texas; they're probably a
That
preseason top
backcourt's
25
nice.
team. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. So if you just went by that, I think Johnson is in a good spot to put up a lot of numbers because I mean he's a scorer, and so, but I could also see it to where, let's say, Alabama is the best team, and let's say Reed just is a huge part of that, that you could see him getting an opportunity. Like I said, any Arkansas guys or any other ones, like you said, Noel, maybe. But that's where I think it's an individual award, but the team has to be somewhat, you know, somewhat good, because otherwise, you know, it's like, well, those contributions really impacted the way that a freshman did who maybe averaged 3 points fewer on a better team. So, yeah, so I think that's a good list. And it's just that, think about it, there's just not as many as there used to be. This is all we talked about. This was one of the biggest awards. But now it's like Kentucky doesn't have a freshman at every spot. You know, other teams don't. Like, it's just, it's so different now. So, yeah, I think that's, if you had to do the betting odds, I would say Reed would be maybe the betting favorite just based on the team projection. But I think Trey Johnson might actually be in the best spot. So we'll see. I think that's a good list.
Yeah, I would go Reed. I mean, if you look at the Big East freshman of the year was Stephen Castle, literally the same exact role that they're going to have to play. And the best team usually gets rewarded. But if I'm not going with one of the top guys, I think Cam Scott at South Carolina is going to just have to produce based on the roster. And then also outside the top 50, Peyton Marshall is a 4-star. That just kind of similar to Cam Scott. I think he's has to produce just based on the team build. So kind of similar to like Josh Hubbard last year, where he wasn't rated as highly as some of the other freshmen, but they needed him, just had to have his shooting. I think Cam Scott, Peyton Marshall might be in that kind of team need role also.
But I'll Scott's a good choice based on what they lost in the backcourt.
Right.
I mean, we talked about it. So yeah, I think that's a good choice too. So, all right, there's a short list of freshmen. And now six man, boy, this is where you just
take your pick.
Honestly, it is. It's like just take your pick. Because I mean, we don't know who's starting, but we can probably move through this one pretty quickly. But I know you've got a list, so give me a list of six man material that you see.
I'm not gonna do any guys that like you have no clue, but just some guys that produced last year in the league that I think will probably be coming in as six man this year. Just going down the list a little bit, I think Latrell Reitzel at some point, probably coming off the bench, might be starting. Dylan Cardwell at Auburn had a huge year last year. Denzel Aberdeen, we were
our guy.
We were courtside for that berserk game that he went in the SEC tournament. I think he's in for a big leap. Juju Murray at Ole Miss just ran the point for a whole year, is now probably going to come off the bench. And then also Anderson Garcia, who we've already talked about, most likely came off the bench the whole year last year, and I would assume this year too. And then if you want to throw in maybe one more, I would say maybe Jordan Gainey for the Tennessee backcourt. Yeah. But that was kind of my short list. I could go through every team, guys, but that was just kind of the names I came up with.
Tennessee's an interesting one, which we'll talk about them in a second, and I'll explain then why they could have multiple six-man of the year candidates, because it's trying to figure out who's going to start in one of these spots. But I think Gainey is one I had near the top of the list. I think you could say we had the discussion last week about Missouri's starting lineup.
Yep.
Whoever the odd man out is there. If that's a Tamar Bates, if that's a Jacob Cruz, if like Caleb Grills in that conference, it could be any of those guys if Missouri meets the expectations of this roster. So I think that's one that I find, you know, as an interesting possibility, someone from that group. And then I think you could take one of the Kentucky point guards. You know, we talked about, you know, Butler and Kerr Creasa. I think you could take one of those guys. Let's say, I mean, it's hard to project right now, like knowing exactly what they're going to do, but I think, let's say you take Butler right now as the starter. Well, I could see Kerr Creasa, you know, winding up in that type of role, playing for Mark Pope in that offense, you know, being a guy who can put up the kind of numbers. And like I said, let's say Kentucky exceeds certain expectations that maybe people just think that this team is not going to be as good as they would have expected. Well, then, you know, Kentucky could be a team where you have that option there. So that's the three I had on my list. I did think about Denzel Aberdeen too. So that's another one. And you mentioned, I think Auburn has a couple different choices. Arkansas, I mean, hey, we still don't know what the final roster is going to be for Arkansas right now.
Yeah.
So I could legitimately go across the board on Arkansas for the backup for each of the positions and say, I can give you a reason why I do Thierro maybe the sixth man of the year or, you know, whoever. So I think that's another interesting one there. So,
yeah, I think if I had to just make a bold pick here real quick, I would go with Aberdeen. I think you lose Zion Pullen, you bring in Elijah Martin, a bit different of a style. But I mean, hey, ZP was first team, you know, like that's hard to replace in one guy. And so I think we saw Aberdeen kind of coming on strong at the end of last year, and now you're going to need a little bit more support in the backcourt. I think Aberdeen is going to – he's going to have to. You know, Florida doesn't have a choice.
All right, well, let's get to our interview with Jordan Harper, as we said, from Tide Illustrated. He is the lead basketball guy there, and what an interesting discussion we had. We've already pre-recorded this, and, yeah, this was a very – fascinating look at where Alabama basketball is right now. And again, we've kind of done a deep dive on a couple other teams the past few weeks, but Alabama is just, they are loaded from a roster standpoint. And we talk a lot about that with Jordan, and really the expectations going into this year, building off the Final Four run, and what could be the thing that either gets them to a national championship or what could be the thing that holds them back. So a very entertaining discussion here. You're going to learn a lot about where things stand with this Alabama roster if you haven't kept up this summer. And so here we go. Let's talk to Jordan Harper. All right, and we do welcome in Jordan Harper. Of course, we've had Jordan on before from Tide Illustrated, and back for another discussion on the one and only Alabama Crimson Tide, the talk of the offseason in SEC basketball. And we are making our way to the Tide here. Of course, if you watched the previous two episodes we've done on the SEC basketball experience, we've talked about Arkansas in depth, Kentucky in depth, but let's get to the Tide, the reigning Final Four Tide. Jordan, there's been nothing going on for Alabama this offseason. Pretty uneventful, no roster moves of significance. So where do things stand with the Tide here?
Yeah, nothing at all. I definitely haven't been on four or five different sports talk show, radio shows in May talking Alabama hoops, which is unprecedented for me. But, no, it's been a phenomenal offseason, depending on how you look at it. You know, there was a lot of turnover with the roster, and there was some uncertainty, obviously, nationwide with the transfer portal. But when you have a coach like Nate Oates, the system that he runs, and the proof of what he does works, like he does in the track record at Alabama, it pretty easy, to be honest. Like, you don't have situations where you're replacing a coach necessarily and having to flip an entire roster top to bottom, like some other schools in the SEC. But Nate Oates can kind of just pluck and pick who he wants. You know, every single guy that went on a visit at Alabama from the transfer portal ended up committing. That's very, very impressive to where the program is right now. Nate Oates' recruiting ability, along with Preston Murphy, who I think was an insanely underrated hire when they got him last offseason after Brian Hodgson left for Arkansas State. People wondered how they would replace that recruiting that Hodgson was so famous for. And Preston Murphy, it's like no drop off at all. So it's been an incredible offseason. They've obviously filled needs that they needed last year. And even though they made the Final Four, there was a lot of defensive needs, length issues that they didn't have in the backcourt specifically that I'm sure we'll cover. And Nate Oates pretty much picked who he wanted and pretty much built a prototype roster from what he had at Buffalo, but on steroids. It's exactly what he's looked for. And it's going to be exciting to watch this upcoming season.
I appreciate the Buffalo shout out. Appreciate that, Jordan.
Yeah, some dogs okay. on that team.
Let's rewind because you went to the Final Four, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just take me through that. One, as an Alabama fan, but also your person, just how was that atmosphere? I mean, that is a like dream bucket list type thing for millions of people.
And that's something that I went with my dad, so that's something that we've always wanted to do. Never thought we would be able to see it, but it was phenomenal being there.
Yeah,
I was always curious how it looked, how it felt, sounded being in a football stadium, a basketball court. And I mean, we sat up in the upper deck. I mean, we didn't try to spend too much on the tickets, obviously. But I mean, we saw everything great. Obviously, we heard the crowd. We saw it happen, and then the crowd kind of echoed a second or two later. But this, the atmosphere of having four passionate fan bases like there were there, and just having them all in one game back to back. I shook the hands of former Alabama players that I never thought I'd get to meet that I grew up watching, like Richard Hendricks and Antoine Petway. I mean, it was phenomenal to be able to be in that atmosphere. I mean, I saw Emeka Okafor there, Charlie Villanueva. I mean, just walking down the street, Fran McCaffrey and Ed Cooley. I walked by them getting out of their Ubers. I mean, it was just phenomenal seeing how many big-time college basketball people come to these games. It was unreal. I mean, it was everything I thought it would be and more.
That's awesome.
Not to play the comparison game, but let's play the comparison game. So that team made the Final Four. And now we look at the way this team has been built. And obviously there are some pieces that are there that were on the Final Four team. Mark Sears, mm-hmm. right? So keep going down the list. Nelson Stephenson, of course. What's the biggest difference between this roster and the roster that just made mm-hmm. the Final Four? Are there significant, would you say, improvements in certain areas? Or what stands out to you as maybe one of the biggest differences with this 24-25 roster versus the one we just saw, 2 months ago in the Final Four?
I mean, the scary thing is I think it's a lot better because not only did they add in areas of need like length in the backcourt, because you had 6'1 Aaron Estrada and 6'1 Mark Sears a lot of the times in the backcourt together. Neither are great defenders. Neither have the length to be able to, to be able to reset that and offset that deficiency that they have. Now they do. They have a Chris Youngblood at 6'4". They have a Houston Millett at 6'5". Getting Latrell Reitzel back. I mean, he's a bigger guard as well at 6'3". And then you got other guys that you can just plug and play in those spots. Darion Reed, that'll play the two or the three at 6'7". I mean, it's just a lot of length that you can put in those two or three. The two to three spot are where Alabama lacked the most defensively, I felt like, last year. Because you have guys playing out of position with Grant Nelson playing the five a lot of the times and Jaren Stevenson playing the four or Nick Pringle at the five. So everybody being able to play their natural position is going to be huge for them. And then to get a reliable ball handler like Aiden Holloway to basically replace Aaron Estrada to back up Mark Sears is huge. And then the one big glaring weakness was rim protection. I mean, Grant Nelson, albeit he didn't play a ton because he was in foul trouble most of conference play, but he did average, nearly two blocks a game. I mean, he was pretty good. He was better than what I thought he would be coming into SEC play, playing that position. But to get someone like Cliff Amori that's going to average probably close to three blocks a game and allow them to play their patented drop coverage that they love to play. When they had Charles Bediako, they would really just back him off of pick and rolls and force guys into long, tough mid-range shots at the elbow or right inside the three-point line. And that's when their defense was top five KenPom for those 2 years. And it was those two teams both had length in the backcourt. You remember John Petty, he was 6'6", Herb Jones, 6'7". And then you had Charles Bediako right there in the middle. And on the other team, I mean, you had a lot of length in the backcourt there as well. So being able to play the style that Nate Oates wants to play and have zero drop-off in shooting along the way is huge. And I think they got better shooting-wise. They got three guys that averaged 38 to 40% or above last year. I mean, Chris Youngblood's never averaged below 40% three-point shooting on five-plus attempts his past 3 years. So it's going to be incredible to see how all that plays out, the rotations, and just the overall chemistry. Because, I mean, you only have a few months to get acclimated with each other's roles. So it's a different game now. So it's just not plug and play and you're automatically national champions. You're going to have to figure out how to play together. And that's going to be the fun part.
If you can find a platform that is higher on Chris Youngblood than how high Blake and I would be shocked. We cannot wait for this guy. But kind of staying on this, so transfer portal era, I feel like sometimes the big-name freshmen coming in just kind of get lost in the mix of all these big transfer gets. We got that guy. We got that guy. We got that guy. When the freshmen committed a while ago and kind of their name mm-hmm. gets just kind of lost. We've been talking a lot in the background, and we both love Darion Reed. kind of talk about what he's going to bring to this team. He just had that AmeriCup, that U18. Mm-hmm. Just kind of talk about Reed, because I feel like he is really, really good, but not getting mentioned much.
Yeah, it's just so many seniors, well-seasoned veterans that are ahead of him being talked about so much. You got multiple fifth-year senior guys on this team. I mean, you got Grant, Mark, Latrell, Chris Youngblood, Houston Millett's a senior. So you got all these guys that have that experience and that notoriety. And then you have Darion Reed, a top 15 player in the country, the second highest rated player to come through Alabama or to be, you know, to sign with Alabama in their history or since, you know, they started tracking it. So, yeah, he gets lost in the shuffle, but he is a very long, athletic. He is a lockdown defender when I say it. He can guard multiple positions. He can guard the one through, I mean, he can guard up to the four. And he's very agile. And if he can just get his consistent outside shot down, which he's going to shoot a lot in the offseason through that shoot and workout that Nate Oates puts him through. So if he can just get up to 35% three-point shooting on maybe two and a half attempts, he's a potential lottery guy. I mean, that's the prototypical wing player in the NBA. He's a two-way player once he gets his shot down. So, yeah, he's definitely been overlooked, as well as some of these other freshmen. But it's not because they're not great. It's because everybody in front of them are very special.
Well, that may have answered my question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So I was going to say, if there's one player on this roster, as you look at it right now, it's not being talked about enough. Mm. Because, you know, we obviously are all talking about Mark Sears returning, Nelson returning, some of the more high-profile additions, which you can pick someone from that if you want. But who's the player that's not being talked about enough on this just absolutely loaded roster?
I want to go kind of outside the box. I'm not going to go with anybody that you might think of. Like, obviously, having Mark Sears back was the key. Getting him back, if he's not back, they're not a national title favorites. They're still contenders. They're not favorites. Aiden Sherrill is a guy that I'm super high on, for a reason being that he's a 7 foot. He measured about 7 foot, maybe even a little taller. Long wingspan. You think Noah Clowney with more athleticism? That's Aiden Sherrill. He's a guy that's going to be able to back up Cliff Amore. Now, whether he plays 20 plus minutes right off the bat like Noah Clowney did, that's to be seen. He's a great shooter. He's probably a better shooter than Noah was coming out of high school. But Aiden Sherrill is going to back up Cliff Amore at the five. He can fill in at the four if Jaron Stevenson or Grant Nelson's in foul trouble. But he's going to allow Grant Nelson to play the five primarily all game. He doesn't have to worry about guarding a postman all game. And that's going to be huge for this team because they didn't have that last year. They had Grant and they had an undersized Nick Pringle playing the five. Nobody else. You wouldn't dare put Jaron Stevenson at the five. So having that security blanket behind Cliff, if he got in foul trouble, to not force Grant over to the five, is going to be huge for this team. It's going to allow so much rotational versatility with them. And to kind of go hand in hand with Aiden Sherrill, I think Jaron Stevenson's also a guy that's not being talked about enough. Obviously, he withdrew from the draft late, and people's been talking about him lately, but he kind of goes hand in hand with Aiden Sherrill. He gives a security blanket behind Grant Nelson as well. Alabama's front court is loaded with versatility. If Grant can become a consistent scorer from the outside, just 34, 35%. I mean, that's obviously well above his averages through his first 3 or 4 years, but he doesn't have to take near as many now. So if he can just average that on, you know, two and a half threes a game, I mean, Alabama's front court is going to be as dangerous in the country as any other.
I agree. And that's what I'm not going to – Blake, let's not give away any rankings here, but I'm pretty sure
– I will. Alabama is going to be our preseason number one team in the SEC.
Okay, fine. Fine.
I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what else – if anybody what else wants to try to convince us it should be someone else, then go for it. But Alabama, spoiler alert, is going to be our number one team, barring an injury, over the next couple months.
Yep. Okay. Cat's out of the bag.
There you go. You're welcome.
We've kind of touched on every part of this roster, except kind of what I would say would be maybe the most confusing when it's like who's going to play how many minutes and what. We kind of have that front court set. And then we kind of have that Sears, Holloway, maybe Filon and at the point guard. But when it comes to like Youngblood, Reitzel, Millett, Reed, Cunningham, that kind of that 2-3 spot, how do you see that kind of shaking out? Or is it kind of like, ooh, I don't know yet.
I tend to lean to the latter, but I can kind of get my best shot at it. So yeah. I'm pretty sure that Mark and Aiden are going to be the primary guards or point guards, ball handlers, whatever you want to call them. LeBaron Filon, I could see playing, you know, not necessarily Davin Cosby minutes, but I see him sneaking in 9-10 minutes a game. I think he's a phenomenal player. He averaged 35 points a game in high school his junior year when he played at Baker High School in Mobile. I got to see him multiple times live. But the 2-3 spot are basically considered hybrid positions in Nate Oates' offense. You don't have to be big to play either one. You don't have to be great ball handlers. That's why they have Mark and Aiden back there at the one. But you have guys like Youngblood, Reitzel, Millett, and Reed, like you mentioned, that all fit that category. And to me personally, I think that they'll end up starting the season. Now, I think it'll be different at the end of the season, and I'll tell you that in a second. But I think they'll end up starting Latrell at the 2, and then they'll start Youngblood at the 3. And the reason being is because I think Latrell Reitzel has definitely earned his right to be the starting 2 guard after his performances and at the end of the season, and then obviously his 3-point shooting is too good to keep off the floor too much. But Youngblood at the 3, it could be him or it could be Darion Reed, but you can't pass up a 50-year senior dude that is just an absolute leader and a dog on the court. I mean, he's bigger. He's 6'5", 6'4", 220. I mean, he's been there. I mean, he's 40-plus percent from 3. Still plays solid defense. He's not great, but he's solid. And he's built, and he's got length. And Alabama's schedule at the beginning of the season is brutal, as it is every year. Do you really want to throw a true freshman into the fire early on at the 3 and just see if he sinks or swims? I mean, I think that you have the luxury of starting Youngblood at the 3 and just letting him play it out, let Darion get in his groove, play, you know, 18, 22 minutes game off the bench early on. And then once he's ready, slide Latrell to the bench, move Youngblood up to the 2, slide Reed into the 3, and then your athleticism on the court is unreal at that point. I mean, Mark tested as the most athletic guard in the draft at the combine, and then you'll have Youngblood, who's super athletic and quick, and then Reed, Nelson, and Amori, you don't even have to explain. So, yeah, I think, honestly, to start the season, it'll be Reitzel and Youngblood at the 2 and the 3. But by season's end, I think you'll see Youngblood at the 2 primarily with Reed at the 3. That could happen by SEC play, to be honest, depending on how he comes along. But that's just kind of my best crack at it. What do y'all think?
Max?
Well, okay, so I never thought about that kind of tough schedule in the beginning, playing, letting Reed get into a little bit of a groove.
I thought about that later on when I started thinking about it. I looked at schedule. I'm like, do you really want to throw Darion out there like that? I don't think they will.
Well, hear me out, because there was a team that just won the national championship with a freshman at the 3 that was a lockdown defender with a little bit of an iffy shot.
You're right.
I'm not saying they're the same, but when you're looking at a national title favorite and you have a potential lottery pick at that sweet spot, 6'7" at the 3, ultra athletic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so high on this guy. So if I was to write down a starting lineup right now, it was going to be Sears, Youngblood, Reed, Nelson, Amori. But now that you say that, I like that. I like that Reitzel and Youngblood start and just ease Reed in. Don't throw him into the fire so quick and maybe hurt his shooting confidence or something like that. You know, you wouldn't want that to happen. So I like that, but I am so high on Darion Reed.
I am too. Yeah, it's hard to keep talent like that off the floor.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got fifth-year senior that's just won his conference player of the year last year. If there's a player to do that, it's probably him or you know, Reitzel. I mean, he could easily come off the bench like he did a lot last year too.
Yeah, I was going to say, if they started Sears, Reitzel, Youngblood, Nelson, Big Cliff, they'd have one of the oldest lineups, I would think, in the country at that point when you just consider those five starting. And so if you do start that off against a tougher schedule, Reed's still playing 20-something minutes a game or whatever. I mean, you can't go wrong. Like, you just can't at that point. But that is where my next question goes, because, Jordan, I'm going to ask you the same thing I've asked the two other guys we've had on so far. We've talked all the positives. We're really pumping up Alabama. But let's just say something goes wrong. Let's say that come January, February, this team is not looking like a Final Four team, or we're trying to figure out what has gone wrong. Last year, certainly the expectation was, man, the defense could really hold this team back. That was our talk all season. But it started getting better. There were other things that got better. If you just look at it now, we're playing hypotheticals because, again, I want to at least paint the picture that it's not a 100% lock that Alabama is just going to steamroll the SEC and win this thing and go grab a national championship. If it doesn't work, give me a reason why based on anything you see. It's really hard for me to find it on this roster right now, but maybe you have a better answer.
Yeah, I'm not going to say injury because obviously that would affect 100% of teams. Like, obviously an injury to a key player would Alabama's deep enough where they could probably survive and a role player injury, but somebody like Mark Sears or Grant Nelson, probably not. But honestly, I feel like it's twofold. One, Aiden Holloway is Auburn Aiden Holloway and can't shoot. Okay. And he's undersized. He can't shoot. And that really puts a lot of pressure on Mark Sears at the one. Makes him play a lot of minutes. He's got a lot of minutes on his legs in college. I feel like the one luxury that they have is that Mark may only have to play 30 minutes a game, and he could be rested by the end of the season and still have fresh legs because he has that guy. That's what happened last year with Aaron Estrada. The other one would be Cliff Amore just didn't pan out in the SEC. Okay. It's hard to imagine that, but he is the key component to why this team is outside of Mark Sears, is the key component to why Alabama is a national title favorite. It's because of his rim defense. If they didn't get Cliff Amore, and say they did get somebody like Ugano Uwenzo or someone like that, they're still going to be great. Don't get me wrong, but Cliff is what put them over the top. Notice when he committed, that's when everybody's like, Alabama preseason number one. If Mark Sears comes back. But he is the guy that put them in that conversation. He's the guy that allows them to play versatile lineups, to be able to play the drop covers that they're going to want to play. Now, I did mention that Aiden Sherrill is going to be his backup, but do you really want a true freshman playing the five in the SEC and with that brutal a schedule majority of the time because Cliff can't stay out of foul trouble? Because he is going to go up against some great competition in the front court in the SEC and in the non-con. So he's going to have to really perform, not at a double-double, four-block-a-game level, but defensively, he is going to have to be the key component for this team. Because if he has any drop-off on defense, I feel like if he's down around the two-block and is always in foul trouble, then I think Alabama's woes defensively might start creeping back to where they were. Although the length in the backcourt does kind of take some of that away as well. I mean, I'm nitpicking here, guys. There's not much, like you said. Like, even if Cliff isn't great, they're still going to be a great team. But you're talking about they didn't reach the Final Four. Why? It's because I think one of the big reasons will be is that Cliff didn't pan out and he wasn't what everybody thought he was.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think a few years of consistency in the Big Ten rather than maybe a high-quality mid-major like Grant Nelson was last year, maybe a little bit more confidence in the translation from the Big Ten to the SEC. Just me, though. But
I have no worries or reservations about Big Cliff playing in the SEC, by the way. that's just me nitpicking, trying to find a reason outside of injury. And that those are two that I could see kind of hindering them some down the stretch.
Yeah, and so kind of to wrap up here, and it may be nothing, but I just figured I would ask. So last year, I mean, one of the fastest paces in the country on offense. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a big reason of that was because you had Mark Sears, who was, you know, incredible, but also Aaron Estrada had a higher assist rate than Mark Sears actually had, you know, was incredible with the ball in his hands. Do you think the loss of Aaron Estrada's creation, playmaking at the two, how do you see that affecting this year's team? Is it more on Mark's shoulders? Do they play more through Grant Nelson and let him, you know, facilitate the offense a little bit more? Kind of just basically, I think the question would be more like, how do you see the shoes of Aaron Estrada being filled?
It's going to be by committee. I mean, he was such a phenomenal player, and he's been showing out really well in the combines and all the games that they play. He's looked really good, and everybody's getting to see what we got to see all last year, is that he was a walking triple-double watch every single game. And Alabama doesn't have that anymore. I mean, yes, Mark Sears is definitely going to have a lot more pressure on his shoulders of being the creator as well as the shot maker. He doesn't have to average 22, 23 points a game this upcoming year for them to make the Final Four again. Keep it at 20, 19. Get your other guys involved. He's going to have to average probably 5-6 assists this year while being a primary scorer. So, yes, a lot more will be put on his shoulders. But that's another reason why I said it's kind of an underlying concern, is that they need someone to be that second guy.
Mm.
And that's where Aiden Holloway comes in. That's where he is a pretty big addition for Nate Oates. Is he going to play 30 minutes again? No. No, he's not. He's probably going to be a Javon Quinterly light kind of role. He's going to be a guy that's going to come off the bench. I think he will play probably 20, 22 minutes a game. But he's going to be that guy that might put Mark off ball, or to give Mark a breather and hopefully have not much drop off at all, playmaking wise. If he can find his shot, that's an added plus. But yeah, Mark Sears is going to have a lot more on his shoulders, and it's going to be by committee with, you know, Latrell Reitzel. I mean, he's brought up the ball a lot last year.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Youngblood, obviously. These are all fifth-year guards that have done various things at their current roles or their previous programs. So those guys are going to have to be asked upon to be playmakers as well, creators for Mark, because he's not a guy that's going to play on ball every single time that he's on the floor. So it's definitely going to be by committee.
Well, Jordan, we'll wrap up with this. Max, have you checked the latest odds from our friends at BetOnline regarding the 2025 national championship odds?
Well, I'll tell you what I got them at.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I got them at also.
But so I didn't realize this. So again, I'm not on Twitter a lot. I just put this out on Twitter actually as we were recording. But like, I'm not on there a lot. Maybe people put this out. I had no idea this was what it was. Like, do we understand, and does everyone listening understand, that Alabama is the current favorite to win the national championship next season in basketball? Like, they are the betting favorite, +800.
+800?
Yeah. Kansas +1,000. UConn also at the same number. So Alabama is currently the betting favorite over the two-time defending national champion UConn, which you could play the odds and say, boy, it's really hard to three-peat, but it's UConn, and these days I don't know if it's that hard based on what they're doing, especially Dan Hurley's back. So that's notable because, again, think about that. Everything we've just had in this 30-minute conversation, if you want to understand that, like, this could be, as Jordan said, a roster that seems even better than the one they just had that made the Final Four, that is why expectations are so high. Like, this is just – there is not a lot to pick apart with this roster, and that's why I thought I was really like testing Jordan here to try to find something, anything, because
it's hard. Yeah,
it is very hard. Like, you really have to come up with something that, like you said, feels on paper unrealistic. Like, I think Big Cliff will be fine. I think that, you know, Aiden Holloway will thrive probably under Nate Oates. Like, there are a lot of things that this team has going for it, and man, it's just, Jordan, it's going to be a fun ride again, I think, just based on what we see right now. So
I got them at 18-1. I just wanted to say that.
Same here.
So there you go. So it's crazy how much that's changed. And I know that a lot has to do with Martin Sears coming back. And it was kind of the odds makers are always kind of delayed on that. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun season. And it's going to be – you're really going to see how they're going to play early on. It's hard playing such a tough early schedule with brand-new players all up and down the roster. But when you got a guy like Mark Sears and Nate Oates at the helm, as long as they're top 50 defense next year, that's all that matters. They don't even have to be top 10. Just be top 50. Just don't be down into the hundreds. I mean – they were playing from behind so much, it seemed like last year. But if they're just in top 50, that's my goal for them, is to be top 50 defense. They'll be top 5, top 10 offense for sure. I mean, hey, with their pace and their play and their talent, that's really all they need.
Real quick, Jordan, did you get that 18-1 before or after the Sears news?
I was before.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I saw them at 21. Like, I believe right when the season ended. And I didn't jump on it because there was a lot of uncertainty. I was like, let's transfer portal play out a little bit. And then once I saw the direction it was going, I better hop on these while they're at 18. I'm glad I did.
I was, like, on Twitter when the Sears news dropped. Like, I was scrolling and I had it. I have never gotten out of an app and opened another one so quick.
Do you guys want to guess the next four SEC teams in order? We'll go quick here because I know Jordan's got to go. But the next four SEC teams in order.
I will say Auburn, Arkansas.
Yep. Have the same odds. 25-1.
Kentucky,
Tennessee. Wow. Kentucky's 33-1. Tennessee, 40-1 right now. So
interesting.
Yep. Close. Texas, 50-1. So the Longhorns. Joining the group here. And
we didn't even talk about adding them and how the dynamic and all that changes, which y'all will on y'all's great show and everything. So, but yeah, it's going to be a fun SEC season, that's for sure.
We're glad you mentioned that, Jordan, because if you are a new listener or watcher, on episode number 2 of the SEC Basketball Experience, we discussed that exact topic of Texas and Oklahoma joining and what it means for the league. But we will have Jordan back, I'm sure, to talk Alabama a lot this season. Jordan, let everybody know where they can find all your stuff.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24, and I'm the head basketball analyst on Tide Illustrated, part of the Rivals Network, and I also have a podcast dedicated solely to Alabama basketball that's year-round called the Double Dribble Podcast. It's available on all platforms. So please go subscribe and listen to all my latest episodes if you're into Alabama basketball.
All right. It's a fun conversation with Jordan Harper. Max, again, we talked a lot about Alabama. If people want to know why, there you go. Just because there are reasons for optimism, to say the least, for Crimson Tide fans. And I do think, as we said, they're going to not just go into the SEC as the favorite. They may go into the 24-25 season as the favorite to win the whole thing. So we'll obviously talk more about that as we get throughout the summer. Before we jump into trivia, as always, guys, we are looking for sponsors for this show. If you want to help us out and sponsor this show or any of the other shows we have on the channel, the SEC Football Hour, Edwards and Greason, you can do that by reaching out to caroline.smith@southeastern14.com. So be sure to reach out and do that there. And of course, Max, I'm searching for that banner somewhere. I know it's somewhere that I need to put on the screen. And of course, Max, I can't find it. So there you go. Caroline.smith@southeastern14.com. We're very, very well prepared here. Listen, when it comes to this kind of stuff. So
you roll with the punches.
Yes, we do. All right. Guess what? It's trivia time.
Let's go.
And I know Max is excited because so far Max did get his who did they play for last week. So it took him a minute. Galen Smith, the Jaylen Alabama Crimson Tide. I know. We really kind of confused him there with Jaylen Smith at Maryland. Galen Smith at Maryland, of course, came from Alabama. But Max gave me a question that was not who did they play for. It was more of a general question, and I have that for him today. But Max, first of all, who did they play for? I'm ready to avenge Zam Frederick from 2 weeks ago, the South Carolina Gamecocks. You told me, you gave me a little teaser that this is one that was recent. So if I miss this one, I am going to retire from SEC basketball because there's no way I should miss one that is recent. There's no way I should. So
I actually didn't even know this, and I was punching myself in the face for not knowing it. Okay. Before becoming one of the best high-volume three-point shooters in the nation the past 2 years at Pitt, Blake Hinson started his career with two seasons at this SEC school in 2019 and 2020.
Ole Miss. Done.
Well, geez.
I'm back, baby. I'm back. Blake Hinson. Mark it down. Ole Miss Rebel. He was someone, you know, played on Kermit Davis's team there, and they had very high expectations. I think that was you said that was 1920, is that right?
It was either 1920 or it was 2021 because he sat out a year.
Yeah, so I'm gonna pull him up right now because I think this is those Ole Miss teams, they just got hit with injuries. Like, I don't think Kermit Davis put together a bad team there. Like,
Brian Tyree running the show.
Yeah, I'm not saying they were going to be top five or anything, but I think the injuries and they just could not seemingly put it all together. But Blake Hinson was someone, if you go back to 2020, so 2020 season, like, this guy's playing, if you look in, I'm trying to see here, so what would that have been? He played a ton of minutes, like a ton. Like, the double overtime game against Auburn, played 49 minutes. 49. You keep going down. Like, he was he didn't play the first four games of the season, but from there on, I don't know what his averages were, but I'd have to believe he played almost 30 minutes a game, maybe more, looking at the numbers here. And even when he came in, like, his first season, I want to guess he averaged probably around 25 minutes a game, something like that. Cool. So, yeah, like, there were very high expectations for him, and I think he was one. I remember the interview with Kermit. Like, that was, they're very excited about the possibilities. And you could see that the first couple of years. Like, he was pretty rock solid for them. And so, yeah, there you go. I'm back with who do they play for? Now it's on. All right, Max.
I have nightmares of Blake Hinson. Nightmares. Well,
mine are still of Sam Frederick. So, but all right, as I said, mine for you is going to be one that is not who they play for. It's just a general question, general trivia here. Okay. My guess is there's no way you're going to get this because you're going to see how far back I'm going. But all the talk this week has been about a repeat national champion, Mr. Dan Hurley, who spurned the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James to return to UConn to go for the three-peat. Well, as we know, UConn was the team that went back-to-back for the first time since 2006 and 2007 when Florida did that under Billy Donovan. Max, The question I have for you is this. There were only two SEC teams in 2006 and 2007, so during this miraculous run that Florida had to go back-to-back and win the national championship in back-to-back seasons. Only two SEC teams beat Florida multiple times, meaning not just in a single season, but beat them multiple times throughout that run. So the Gators lost, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So, yeah, they lost six SEC games in 2006. By the way, they went 33-6, so all their losses came in SEC play. The following year in 2007, they lost five games. Only three of them came in SEC play. So that's a combined, whatever, nine SEC losses in those 2 years. But only two teams beat Florida multiple times. Who was it?
Okay, I'm trying to think of who was good back then.
It actually ties into a certain coach that we talked about a few minutes ago. Or not a few minutes ago, a while ago now.
Okay. I'm going to say, I think Missouri. No?
No. I'll give you two more guesses, though. I'll give you three guesses, so all you have to do is get two out of three.
Okay, wait. I think I might be on to one. Kentucky?
No.
All right.
I'll give you one more guess. You're not going to get two of them, but I'll give you one more guess for the team.
There was Tennessee? A coach.
Yes. So Tennessee is one of them. So Tennessee was actually the team that beat Florida the most in those two seasons. Tennessee beat them three times. So three of their nine losses during that stretch in SEC play came via Tennessee. And they were, of course, coached at the time by who, Max?
Bruce.
Bruce Pearl. So Tennessee beat them twice in the 2006 run, which, remember, that's when Florida turned it on. I mean, they were struggling down the stretch. So, I mean, they were 8-6 in SEC play at one point, and then they did not lose a game after that. So Tennessee beat them three times during that stretch, two during that season, beat them once the following season in 2007. And then the other team, and this ties into everything with our trivia, goes back to the man who coached none other than Sam Frederick. That was Dave Odom in South Carolina. So South Carolina beat the Florida Gators twice in a span of 2.5 weeks in 2006. So remember, that's, like I said, it's so, if you go back, it's so fascinating that Florida started the run there. After they, on a three-game losing streak, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, they did not lose the rest of the season, won the national championship. Then the following year, they, you know, they just steamrolled through pretty much everybody, although they did lose 3 of 5 going into the SEC tournament that year too. But still, yeah, so it was Dave Odom in South Carolina beat them multiple times. The other teams that beat Florida during that stretch, as I mentioned, Arkansas beat them once. Alabama beat them once in 2006. Go to 2007, Vanderbilt beat them, and so did LSU. So
I was going to say Vandy because I thought you
was
would
at
do
that game
like that to me.
I was at that game. So there you go. Trivia there too. I was at the game, February 17th, 2007. I think that's the game Kevin Stallings and Joakim Noah got into it. I'm pretty sure that was it. So Commodores 83-70 victory over the Gators. So there you go.
That's a good one. I should have known. Well, I knew Tennessee, but I should have known someone else. All good.
Yeah. It's all right. So the Vols and the Gamecocks were the two teams that got the best of Florida during that run. So there you go. All right, Max, but that brings us to our next segment, one of our new favorites here, Southeastern 14. Guess the starting lineup. We did this last week with Missouri. Now we're going to do it with another team, and it's the Vols. The Tennessee Volunteers are up next. And we did this one because I think this will be easier than Missouri, and we'll see if we're proven right about this. All right, so just like we did last week, I think we can go ahead and fill in a couple spots that we know are pretty much locks. And that, to me, as I look at this, I feel pretty good about that being Zakai Ziegler, Chaz Lanier, and Felix Akpara. I think the others are, I could see different combinations elsewhere, although I'm with you and we talked about this before. I think Mayshak's probably in there, but I could see a scenario where that's not the case, but I think those three are the ones I would start with, and then I'm curious where we go from there.
Yeah, so what I had is I had definitely Ziegler and Akpara at the 1 and 5. And then I had Lanier and Mayshak, but I could see Ganey in one of those two spots instead.
Yeah.
And then I've got, that leaves the four, and that's probably the hardest one to decide between Igor Milicic and Darlin Stone-Dubar. Now, I actually broke those two down way too far in depth to try to see who I would start. And I've got Darlin Stone-Dubar. Now they both started Power Five and then transferred down. So Dubar started at Iowa State, transfers to Hofstra, and Milicic starts at Virginia, transfers to Charlotte. Now they both played similar levels of minutes. They played a ton of basketball. Dubar's O rating a little bit higher, 121 to Milicic's 113. They both rebound slightly the same, but Milicic is a little bit better on the D boards. Milicic will turn it over more, but it'll also create a little bit more, call that kind of a wash. But then Dubar, the three-point shooting is the big difference. Dubar made 72 threes on 40%, and Milicic made 56 on 38. Not shabby at all, but Dubar, quite higher volume and a little bit more efficient. So if you want to go with a little bit more brute strength, rebounding, need a little bit more physical, probably go Milicic. But if you're looking for some offense, some spacing, some efficiency, probably go Dubar. That's how I kind of separate those two.
I wonder from a size standpoint, obviously if Akpara's in there, you got a 6'11 guy.
Yep.
But if you go Lanier, Meshack, you've got 5'9", 6'4", 6'4", with Ziegler at the point. And then if you put Dubar in there, it's 6'8", versus Milicic at 6'10". I don't know if that's a huge difference, but you see my point is that, you know, it would give you a little bit more size if you have Milicic, and like you said, maybe a little bit more rebounding as well. But Dubar's scoring ability is interesting to me because if I would see Lanier and Dubar as the most likely guys to lead the scoring attack. And I always say this, like everybody thinks I'm just leaving out Ziegler when I talk about that. But to me, the ideal role for Tennessee is for Ziegler to play the facilitator. Mm. Not that he can't score, but I think they're going to be better if he can turn Lanier and Dubar into 14, 15 or more point per game scorers, you know? And so, but if they have to rely on Ziegler, that's fine. But I think it's always a fine option to not have your point guard be the driving force of the offense, right? And it, mm-hmm. from a scoring standpoint, like, yes, he's the driving force in terms of making sure everything goes as it needs to. But so, yeah, like I'm curious, but that's also not to say that Milicic couldn't be one of those guys too. Like he could be the guy.
Yeah.
I don't have a great read on that one. Like I'll just be honest, like this is one that just like we did with Missouri, I feel like we were more curious at multiple spots, but for this one, that's the one where I'm fascinated to see which one Tennessee goes with there.
Well, and the interesting thing also is these guys do not foul at all, and they play a ton. So Dubar played a little bit over 87% of the minutes at Hofstra. He only fouled twice per 40 minutes. You go to Milicic. He played just over 81% of the minutes at Charlotte. He fouls a little bit over three times per 40 minutes. I mean, so you're going to be able to play a legitimate 40-minute two-man game at the four with Dubar and Milicic. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 20 minutes, 20 minutes, split even. But for argument's sake, I'll go Dubar to start.
Could you see a scenario where it's Ziegler, Lanier, Dubar, Milicic, and Akpara?
I've seen that thrown around like in the Trilly Discord and a few other places, you know.
I think that could happen, Max. I'm going to be honest. Like the more I look at it, I think that could be fascinating. But
well, if you watch that Hofstra Duke game where Dubar hits like seven threes, you start to get some ideas flowing about what they can do with this guy. Hey, I would like to see a little Dubar and Milicic. I think it'd be interesting.
Have Ziegler, Lanier, Dubar, Milicic, Akpara, with Gainey and Meshack as your first two off the bench.
Got Estrella also. I mean, Estrella's not bad at all.
Yeah, you've got Estrella who already played, you know, quality key minutes last year.
Yeah.
I might like that a little more than I like any of the others because I know it's like you lose guys and you expect the guys who played complimentary roles last year to automatically move into those next roles, which to me, that's Gainey and Meshack. But, you know, maybe that's where they're best served in terms of like you're getting the most out of them there where they don't have to necessarily just all of a sudden become, you know, a 10 plus point per game score or something, which I think Gainey, we talked about the sixth man of the year. I think Tennessee's got multiple options here because it depends on who they decide to start and who kind of fills that six-man role. But if Gainey's the first person off the bench, if Meshack's the first person off the bench, or maybe it's a Milicic or a Dubar, like they're all possible candidates, I would think. So,
I've also seen a lot of Cam Carr breakout watch also.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of hype around Cam Carr. So,
All right. Well, this one, you're going to go Milicic. I might go with the big group of Ziegler.
You're going big?
Dubar, Milicic, Akpara. But I don't know about that. I think Gainey's the one I have a hard time figuring out. Man,
yeah.
I feel like they want to start him. But then you would have to probably go Ziegler, Gainey, Lanier, which I think you could do. I think you could put Meshack as the first off the well, but again, yeah, you still have the Dubar Milicic discussion. But I could see that. I could see, I mean, you got scoring right there. If you got Lanier and Gainey on the floor at the same time, good luck guarding you. Then if you got Milicic or Dubar, like, you've got scoring there too. So, yeah.
I think if you're looking at it from like Rick Barnes' point of view, if you want to sacrifice a little defense and pump up the offense,
yeah,
probably take out Meshack and put in Gainey. If you want to make sure you've got the defense on lockdown, you gotta probably have Meshack on the floor, because you don't have,
yeah,
as good as Dubar and Milicic are, they're not Josiah Jordan James defensively, you know? So yeah, Meshack's defense then becomes a little bit more valuable, but hey, they got options.
Yeah, may not need as much scoring if you have Lanier leading the way like we think, and a Milicic or Dubar leading the way scoring wise, and Ziegler, of course, is going to score. So you would need Felix filling that role inside, Meshack on the perimeter. So yeah, I think there's multiple combinations here. So yeah, I think Tennessee's got one of the more interesting cases when it comes to figuring out their lineup. So all right, there's a look or some thoughts on Tennessee's starting lineup. And now, Max, what do you know?
I'm already laughing.
You're already laughing because you know what's coming. For the first time ever on the SEC Basketball Experience, listener voicemails. So we put this out, and just if you're listening to this, watching this, you can leave a voicemail for us at any time. All you have to do is go to memo.fm/SEC basketball. I think that's it. Let me make sure. it is. memo.fm/SEC basketball. All you have to do is hit the start recording button. Anywhere, your phone, your computer, doesn't matter. Just talk into it. Leave us a question, a comment. Boom. That's how you get to the show. And you're gonna hear what we're talking about right now, because we have four that we're going to go through here, and we'll go through these a little quick. And this week,
I'll leave this in the description, so you can just click on it if you want to.
Leave in the description. Anytime, you can leave us a voicemail, and we'll play it on the show. Well, we might play it on the show. We can't guarantee you we're going to play it on the show. All right, we're going to start things off this week, Max. Listener voicemail with the one and only Big Baller Brett.
Woo! Who are y'all's way too early SEC Player of the Year picks, and why is it Mark's here?
Course. Big Baller Brent, who are SEC Player of the Year picks, and why is it Mark Sears? Well, no surprise that Big Baller Brent going the Mark Sears route. Of course, Max, you and I talked about our player ratings video game style in last week's episode, and we mentioned that Mark Sears and Jedi Broom are probably your top front runners there for this award. I don't think that's much of a debate, probably, but would you think it's fair to say that, you know, the other guys we had kind of in that category, we did our player ratings, would be guys like Walter Clayton, yep, John L. Davis, Grant Nelson, and so forth.
Wade, maybe.
Wade Taylor, yeah. Again, I don't have the list in front of me, but
no,
I knew I'd forget someone. But
there's a bunch. But I think you can kind of separate Sears and Broom from the pack, taking nothing away from Walter Clayton and these other guys that are in the conversation 100%. But I think Sears and Broom have a little bit of an edge on the other guys. And, I mean, you can't go wrong going either or. But for the sake of who would I pick right now for a player of the year, I would go Broom. And that's not because I think Broom is far and away better than Sears. I think the way that Auburn's team is built this year without Jalen Williams, who was in that first team conversation last year for a while, without Jalen Williams, I think there's going to be a lot more front court responsibility offensively for Broom, whereas Sears, you know, he doesn't have Estrada anymore, but I mean, the talent on that team, the guard play on that team, my goodness, you know, he's not going to have to do literally everything. Whereas I'm not saying Broom will, but without Jalen Williams to kind of form that 1-2 punch, I feel like it's more of Broom's got to kind of handle that offensive load a little bit more.
All right, next up, we've got a question from Veronica.
What SEC team do you think is the most underrated in terms of the new players they added to the roster? So the incoming freshmen and transfer portal additions.
Good question.
Most underrated haul, underrated offseason haul here.
Do you think it's Vanderbilt?
It very well could be. Is that your
I'm
pick?
I'm asking. Like, that would be one of the choices I would put in there, and you guys know why. I mean, I made the bold prediction. I'm trying to push it along here. I'm not saying the betting odds will favor them making the tournament, but I think the more I look at the roster, and you mentioned A.J. Hogard, but, like, there's some pretty interesting choices. And you've got a lot of guys who are transferring up. Hogard is not that way. But the other guys, a lot of them are, which is always a question. But I think about Mark Byington's system that he's going to run. I think about just, like, you know, just the style of play. It looks like they've got some potential depth there. I mean, you know, you do got the guys that come over from Virginia Tech and Collins and Nickel and those guys. Yep. So I think I would put Vanderbilt near the top of this discussion, and there are probably some other teams we can find elsewhere, but I think they're one I'd put in there.
And Devin McLaughlin at BC was, like, really good. So
they have four guys. Never mind. I said there wasn't transferring up, but that's more of like the backups maybe. They got a lot of guys who are coming from Power Conference.
Yeah, and Kajani Wright for USC was he was a pretty good big man in the Pac-12 last year.
Yeah, what am I talking about? Who am I thinking of that's transferring up? Like, yeah,
Mannon, the Harvard guy.
You've got that's the one I was thinking of, but like who else is there? You've got
Jalen Carey from JMU.
You've got Edwards, Carey. Huffman. Yeah, like I just completely looked over their starters. I was looking at the what projected would be maybe for some people the next five. I didn't even look at the top five. But, yeah, you've got all these guys who have Power Conference experience. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would say Vandy's up at the top for underrated. And then I would say probably I'm not going to say they're going to be crazy, but George's Hall, not going to lie, is not bad at all. RJ Godfrey just played a very important role for Clemson, we just saw Clemson take Alabama to the wire in March Madness. And then Tyron Lawrence, we know Tyron Lawrence pretty well. Justin Abeson at App State was one of the best defensive big men in the country. And then you get the Mount St. Mary's backcourt with LaFeu and Montgomery. Now I'm not saying, you know, I don't know how they're going to end up and how they're going to mesh and everything, but when we're just talking about off-season hauls that have not been talked about too much, they've got two of the top 50 incoming freshmen in Newell and Cyril also. Like, they're just – I don't think there's been enough attention on kind of how that the talent on this team, especially for – we're talking Georgia here. Like, they've got some talented guys that Mike White has kind of put together.
All right, next up, we go to Zach.
Hey, Blake. Hey, Max. Huge fan of the show here. I just want to know what team or teams you think are the biggest threats to Alabama and Auburn this year in the SEC. Personally, I think they're the clear top two. Thanks.
That's a good question.
I think we agree with Zach that as of right now, it may be hard for us to put anyone else in the top two other than Alabama and Auburn. So, but beyond that, Max, I think we've talked about one in this show. I think Tennessee is one of those teams that, as we mentioned, the more you talk about the lineup, the rotation, I think the Vols could be in the conversation there based on, you know, if you get the breakout type seasons you could see from Dubar, Milicic, Lanier, all those guys. So I would put Tennessee right there in that category.
Yep.
Beyond that, I mean, look, we do this every year, but it's a little bit different this year with Arkansas, where you can't deny the talent that Cal has put together on the roster. And so I don't know that they win the league, but I get more interested by the day in Arkansas, just based on, you know, again, what they have done roster-wise. And then beyond that, I mean, A&M, I feel like, is going to factor into the mix. But I do tend to think, and I may add Tennessee in there, and maybe it's not fair not to add A&M, but I think there's a little bit of a cutoff after Alabama and Auburn right now, although I think Tennessee, for me, would be the closest to them.
Okay. I'm going to go with A&M. I think A&M's the biggest threat because what I'm thinking is when Alabama and Auburn, and I'm not saying they're going to go undefeated at home, but when they go on the road, what Vegas spread is going to be real tight when they go on the road? And I'll tell you right now, if you're looking at Texas A&M's lineup, their rebounding, the defense. And this is, if you're going Wade Taylor, Zurich Phelps, Obaseki, Solo Washington, Farrell Payne, Henry Coleman, Andy Garcia, CJ Wilcher, and Jace Carter. If that's your, like, if that's your nine-man rotation, that's senior, 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 junior, junior, senior, 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 senior. That's going to be a tough team to play. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be top two. I'm saying when Alabama and Auburn have to go to A&M, any team has to go to A&M. That's going to be a real tough team to play.
My hesitation on A&M is that they just were so inconsistent last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they lose Tyrese Radford.
Yep.
And I don't know. Like, I'm not quite there yet, even though they could have the best player in the league if Wade Taylor is Wade Taylor, he can be the best player in the league. There's no question. And I do like the pieces around it. I don't know, man. I think sometimes, like, they played so well down the stretch last year,
mm-hmm.
that I forget just how rough it was before that. I mean, again, we're talking about a team that lost at Vanderbilt, at Arkansas, got beat by 35 on the road at Tennessee, 25 on the road at Alabama. So I think I just want to – I mean, even the non-conference last year, they played a tough non-conference schedule, but as we said, they just were not able to win some of those big games other than maybe the Iowa State one. So I kind of want to see it from A&M. I think they've got the roster to do it. And like you said, the experience, I think, will drive that. They're a pretty experienced team last year too. But not as experienced as they will be this year. And so I think that's a good call. Cause I could definitely see that being the case with A&M.
I'm higher than most people.
Well, I mean, you should be, but I think I'm curious to see how it all plays out there. And there are other teams that we could probably put in this category. Like we said, could we see a breakout season from, I don't know. I mean, I mentioned Kentucky earlier. Like, can Kentucky be a team that there?
Yep.
I think right now the question was framed the biggest threat. And to me, I would probably say it's Tennessee, but I could make the case, as you did for Texas A&M, maybe in Arkansas, depending on who else they add to the mix. So, all right. We got one more, Max. And you know who this comes from. None other than Sam Smith. So here we go. Sam Smith, who never just has one thing to say. He's got multiple things to say. Prepare your earbuds for the Sam Smith experience.
Hello, Mr. Lovell and Mr. Barr. Big fan of the show. I have three questions for you today. Do you think Tennessee's offense will make my eyes bleed this year? Question number two, with Vanderbilt firing Jerry Stackhouse, who is a proven winner and the GOAT, and hiring Mark Byington, do you think they win a game this year? Anchor down. And question number three, for Christopher Lee. Mr. Lee, sir, what is your favorite honey bun brand? Big fan of the show, guys. Keep up the great work. Go Cats. Go Mark Pope.
Oh my, where to even begin? He anchored down in there. He said, go Cats. He said, Mark Byington, although just did it in a way that none of us could replicate. He wanted to know honey bun flavor brands for a guy who's not even on the show. Sam, Chris, not even on the show, and you're asking Chris questions. And so is Tennessee... offense going to make him... No, the offense isn't going to make your eyes bleed, I don't think. Is Vanderbilt going to win a game? I would say yes. And then the honey buns will leave to Chris, Max.
We got to retitle this the Sam Smith experience.
Yeah. Like, if we didn't need, like, help from the algorithms, like, we would totally title this episode the Sam Smith experience. But, yeah.
To answer, I think his...
Don't answer these questions. Come on.
His worry.
You're going to set a bad precedent by offense. Doing this.
His worry about the offense is warranted. He's a Tennessee fan. He's worried about the offense. Yeah, I'm here to tell you, you've got two of the top 10 most efficient guys on offense from last year in Lanier and Dubar. You got nothing to worry about.
All right. Well, we do when we accept your listener voicemails, as you saw there. But again, if you want to leave a voicemail for next week's show, you can do that. Go to memo.fm/SEC basketball. And Max will put the link to that in the description. So you have to just click on it. You can find us on Twitter, too, to find it there. So we appreciate the voicemails, everyone there. And so, yeah, leave more for next week and we'll discuss. All right, Max, we wrap up this lengthy edition of the SEC Basketball Experience with our bowl predictions. As always, if you're new to this, here's what we do. Each week we make a bowl prediction. We're going to put these all on a piece of paper, and we're going to go back and see if we get any of these right by the time we get to the end of next season. So far, Max and I have made a couple interesting selections here. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't have a great read on mine for this one here, so I'm going to let Max go first, although I have a pretty good idea of what direction I'm going in.
Okay, this is my boldest yet. Mm. Now, I had one originally, and I was like, it's just not bold enough. So this is, and I took it to the extreme then. So I'm probably going to call me a crazy man for this one. And I'm keeping it on theme with our last segment here. The 2024-25 Texas A&M Aggies.
Oh.
Are going to be the best team Buzz Williams has ever had.
Wow.
Okay. I was going to go best team at A&M, but I was like, it's not bold enough. I'm going he ever had. Now, I looked into it a little bit. So his three top KenPom finishes are 19th, 18th, and 13th. That's up there. Okay. Yeah, so he finished 19th with Marquette when they had the Jimmy Butler, Wesley Matthews team. Then he finished 18th also at Marquette with the Jay Crowder and Vander Blue team. And then about 5-6 years ago at Virginia Tech finished 13th. That was the Nikhil Alexander Walker, Kerry Blackshear team. A&M last year finished 35th in KenPom. So we're going to need a sizable jump. To beat that 13th finish for Virginia Tech. Now that Virginia Tech team finished 11th in offense, 20th in defense. A&M last year, 26th, and 68th in defense. So got to take big jumps in both. And now here's where I kind of tried to figure that out. It's like, how are we going to get that defense from 68th to like top 25? Well, you mentioned Tyrese Radford is gone. Well, they bring in a man by the name of Zurich Phelps. Okay. And Tyrese Radford last year had 14 steals and 4 blocks. 14 steals, 4 blocks. Not bad. Phelps had 63 steals and 15 blocks. 14 and 4, 63 and 15. The defense is going to get better. Okay. You also bring in CJ Wilcher from Nebraska, kind of come off the bench. He's made 42 plus threes in 3 straight years. That's something A&M has not had. So you get a little bit of three-point shooting off the bench, reliable three-point shooting off the bench that they didn't have. So you take out Radford, put in Phelps, put in CJ Wilcher. There's that trade-off. Then in the front court, you retain Solo Washington, you retain Henry Coleman, you retain Andy Garcia, and then you add Farrell Payne, who finished 3rd in the Big Ten in offensive rebounding, 8th in the Big Ten in block rate. Front court gets better. I think the defense gets better. Little going to be iffy if the offense can jump from 26th to 11th. We'll see. That's why it's a bold prediction. But I'm very high on A&M, and I didn't want to sheep out on the bold prediction. I'm going bold. Best team he's had.
I like that. I think there's a good possibility that could be the case. Like you said, you mentioned all the reasons why. So I like that one. All right. I'm going to be honest here. Like, I am trying to pick between multiple, and I'm like, do I want to save one of these for next week, go with this one for this week? One of them I don't feel like is as bold as I want it to be. So I'll give you and you can tell me if this qualifies. I was going to say Riley Kugel is going to have his best college season at Mississippi State now. So he was at Florida a couple years. We talked about, you know, he was kind of a breakout guy. But if you look at the numbers, he averaged 9.9 points in 23, 9.2 points last year. So, I mean, if he averages 11 points, sure, that could – but is that that bold? I think he's got – I mean, if you look at that team right now, wouldn't you say there's probably a good chance he's the second best scorer on the roster?
That's crazy you said that, because I was going to say a bold prediction would be like Kugel leads them in scoring or something like that.
That you're right. So I don't know. So I would probably have to reframe that to use it that way.
I like the thought, though. I like it.
I kind of like that one. But I'm like, I don't think he's outscoring Josh Hubbard.
So I don't either.
I don't know if I can go that route. Boy.
That's why we're bold, though. That's why we're bold.
I know. I can't do it. I think Hubbard, there's going to be too many shots going up with Hubbard.
Yeah.
And I don't think Kugel will be able to match that, because I think Hubbard's definitely the go-to guy. All right. I know this isn't like that. It's hard to quantify this one as a bold prediction, but I'm going to give it to you anyways. I'm going to say that one of the players that we are talking about the most in SEC basketball by the time the calendar turns to 2025, okay, is Jordan Sears at LSU.
Wow.
So
wow,
we have barely talked about LSU.
Yes.
In anything we've done this summer. And that may not be ideal for LSU fans. But to be completely honest with you, when I look at LSU's roster, I think there's probably a decent chance that LSU is going to be picked in the bottom half of the league. I don't think I'm surprising anyone there if you look at what the preseason picks could be from the media outlets and everything. But Jordan Sears, there just is not a lot of discussion on him, right? And if you don't know who Jordan Sears is, this is like the Sears show. Maybe we should, that should be the title, because like we're bookending this with about guys named Sears. But Jordan Sears averaged 21.6 points per game last year at UT Martin. He was in the top 10 in the country in scoring. Averaged 4.6 rebounds, 4.5 assists. This guy, let's call it what it is. I mean, he was with Jacob Cruz last year, and we talked about Jacob Cruz in Missouri. But I mean, those two guys were the guys, right? Sears averaged 21.6, Cruz averaged 19. Hard to project maybe on a team, you know, that they won 20-something games. Don't forget that. Like, I think that's what you have to remember, too. This wasn't just a bad team where these guys are just out there doing what they want on a team that's bad, right? So I think it's interesting, Max, to go with Jordan Sears as a potential breakout player. And I'm going to say that if we're saying make me a short list of 3 to 5 players that we're talking about the most in SEC basketball, maybe most excited about going into SEC play, outside of the obvious ones, right? Let's not just go with the Mark Sears and Jani Broome and those guys. Put Jordan Sears on that list. I think he's going to have a fantastic season at LSU.
That's probably my favorite bold prediction either of us have done yet. I like that a lot.
You can tell I was so sure about it. So... thoughts on Jordan Sears?
I mean, hey, UT Martin. Been watching a lot of them this offseason. Didn't know I would be watching so much UT Martin with Cruz also coming over. But, yeah, he's a high-volume guy with high efficiency. Yeah. Whenever you see that, you know you're getting something good, because you can be high-volume all you want and put up numbers at the mid-major level. But if you're not real efficient with it, when that volume comes down, when you transfer up, sometimes those numbers slip. But when you have that high efficiency with that high volume, man, I like it.
All right. There you go. More bold predictions. We'll see if we get any of these correct. But some bolder than others. But, hey, we're trying to come up with some good ones for you guys so we can go back and laugh at ourselves if we get some of these right or wrong looking at it. But there you go. Episode 3 of the SEC Basketball Experience in the books. Max, as always, a fun discussion here, and we've got some exciting stuff on the way for everyone here at Southeastern 14, so make sure you hit that subscribe button. We might have some more interviews coming soon, and it might be of the coach variety. Yes, we are planning to have some head coaches on here in the coming weeks, so be sure to hit that subscribe button and hit the like button. Check out everything else we got on the channel. Football, baseball. We've got the SEC Football Hour, one of our other new shows. We've got Edwards and Greason, our betting show, every Friday, so check those shows out. May have some new ones coming as well. So we appreciate you guys watching and or listening. As always, again, we're looking for sponsors. Reach out to caroline.smith@southeastern14.com if you want to sponsor us. And, yeah, we've got a lot of fun stuff in the works here. And we appreciate you guys checking out the SEC basketball experience. And we'll talk to you next time here on the show.